Stephen Brill is with us now, journalist, author, and businessman. His books include Class Warfare, Inside the Fight to Fix America's Schools, and After, the Rebuilding and Defending of America in the September 12 Era. He is the author of Time Magazine's longest story that the magazine has ever run by a single author, Bitter Pill, Why Medical Bills Are Killing Us. And we'll welcome phone calls for Stephen, 800-486-8655. Stephen, thank you very much for being with us.
Happy to be with you.
What an article. You've received a lot of attention on this one, and it's
a needed
article. Hey, let me just start with, before we get into some of the specifics of the stories, which are incredible, why is it that the federal government in America doesn't regulate the prices that healthcare providers can charge?
Well, we're unique among developed countries in sticking to the mythology, frankly, that it's a free marketplace, and we don't like to regulate free markets. But the fact is, as anybody knows who's ever bought healthcare, ever been a patient, or ever tried to read an insurance company's explanation of benefits, it's anything but a free market. The pricing is completely non-transparent and happenstance. The leverage you have when you go to buy this product is zero. If you end up in the emergency room, it's not like you can decide to shop around. And even if it's not the emergency room, if you need a life-saving prescription drug, the drug company basically charges you whatever it wants.
Yeah.
And if your doctor says you need a CT scan, who are you to say you don't need the CT scan, let alone, inquire as to the price of the CT scan? Now, if you're insured, you tend not to care about that stuff, except you should care, because the more they charge, the higher your insurance premiums, the more you pay for insurance, and the more your copay is.
I'm thinking of the many stories. The one of the woman who thought maybe she was having a heart attack, she was having chest pains, went to the hospital 6 hours later. It was heartburn. It wasn't a heart attack. Goes home and has a bill for over $6,000 and is still paying it off years later.
Right. This woman is a school bus driver in the Stamford, Connecticut area, the Bridgeport, Connecticut area. I'm sorry. And she, as you say, she went to the emergency room because she thought she might be having a heart attack. She was 62 years old at the time, and the good news was it was just indigestion. The bad news was, with just the test that they ordered for her and everything else, it was something like an $8,500 bill. And she thought she had health insurance, but her health insurance was of the limited kind that many people have whose employers can't afford to get them more comprehensive health insurance. And that insurance limited her to $2,500 per hospital visit, which is ridiculous. You literally can't walk into a hospital and walk out with anything, approaching something as small as a $2,500 bill. So she ended up, as you say, owing $6,000 for all kinds of things. The profit margins that hospital made on her were enormous, 200-400%, depending on the item or the test. And they sued her and made her pay the whole thing.
Mm. You start the story, and this story is probably familiar with more people than it ought to be familiar with. This 42-year-old from Lancaster, Ohio, who was told he had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. They did have insurance, but it was not a comprehensive insurance. And, oh, my gosh, this story is just awful. Please tell us.
Well, this man from Ohio, his wife's father had also had cancer at one point in his life, and the MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, which is world-renowned, had treated him and done a great job prolonging his life. So his wife wanted him to get there, and they immediately made an appointment to go there. And they were told that their insurance wasn't really good enough, and they'd have to pay in cash up front $35,000 just to get a treatment plan, and then another $48,000, something like that, just to begin the treatment. And when one of the checks didn't clear. It didn't bounce, but they just couldn't get verification from the bank. He was left waiting in a holding room, panicked because his tumor had grown, and they wouldn't let him in to see the doctor to get his first treatment. And once again, they charged him 100% of their so-called their charge master rates, which included, you know, $77 for a box of gauze pads, and as the Time magazine cover depicts, $1.50 for a generic version of a Tylenol pill, and you can buy 100 of them for $1.50 on Amazon.
So why is it that people don't know that? I mean, couldn't you create a stink if you were in a hospital and they started bringing you the Tylenol? Could you ask them, how much are you charging me for this? And I'm sorry, I think I'll get it from the drugstore.
Well, let's think about that for a minute. The only thing you know is you have a life-threatening illness. You're in this man's case, he has chills and he's sweating.
Yes.
At the same time, he's been told he has cancer. He feels a tumor growing in his chest, and he's waiting for his treatment. Do you really think he's in a position to negotiate the cost of a Tylenol pill?
Right. Well, why is it that nobody is negotiating the cost of a Tylenol pill? It's happening to so many people, and it's obviously crazy.
Because we don't regulate hospitals, and we assume, all of us, that the local friendly nonprofit hospital, which does great work, it cures the sick in our community. There's no question about it, but we assume that the nonprofit hospital is nonprofit when really that's just a technical legal term and a tax term. It makes a ton of profit, has very high profit margins, pays its executives in the stories that I covered millions of dollars a year. In a place like, you know, Stamford, Connecticut, the hospital executive, the non-doctor administrator of the hospital, is one of the highest paid business executives in town. And you know, they all, you know, every hospital has a local charity dinner, which, you know, celebrates the good works of the hospital. And the hospital does do good work, but the charity dinner has nothing to do with the economics of the hospital. It's really for show because, for example, in the case of Stamford Hospital, all the charitable contributions amount to, I think, less than 1% of the revenues of the hospital. They're making money on things like, you know, overcharging for CAT scans and for Tylenol pills.
Mm-hmm. Are there hospitals in the country that are operating by a different model?
There are some. There are some that do it differently. There are some that are more careful than others about how they charge. But as a general matter, if you have an economic structure that allows people to charge what they want and make as much money as they want, sooner or later you're going to have widespread abuse. And that abuse has, you know, flowered in this country into a system where we spend 20% of our gross national product on health care, and the typical, you know, developed country, whether it's Germany or France or England or Israel, you name it, spends 8 to 10%. And that's the difference. And the difference is in the European countries, for example, as in Canada, drug prices are regulated because everybody understands that a drug company really can charge whatever it wants if you really need that prescription.
Right.
So, and even where they're regulated, they make lots of profit. I mean, very good profit margins, even when they're regulated. It's just that in the United States, it's like the gold rush.
Well, there's so many dramatic findings in this piece, but you say that it causes you to just stop and say, whoa, and you got to think about it. We spend more in healthcare than the next 10 biggest spenders combined. Japan, Germany, France, China, Italy, Spain, and Australia.
Right, and add up the population of those countries. Remember,
right,
you also included China in that. You know, they way outstrip us. We basically spend pretty much twice per capita you know, twice per person on health care in the United States as any other country. And by the way, if you think that's because we get better results and have better health care, you'd be wrong. We don't have better results.
So does the Affordable Care Act change any of this?
It changes a little of it sort of at the margins, but it doesn't really change it. The what I tried to say in the piece was the Affordable Care Act, and indeed much of the debate we have about health care is always about who should pay for the high price of health care, not why is the price so high.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Affordable Care Act puts more people under the umbrella of health insurance, you know, eliminates insurance companies' ability to reject you if you have a pre-existing condition. All that's good stuff, but that's just going to cost all of us a lot more money.
Mm-hmm. Well,
because we haven't done anything about, you know, the $13,000 per dose, you know, cancer wonder drug, which is, you know, a couple of thousand dollars in any other country.
Right. Oh, I got to stop talking because we have so many people who would like to speak with you. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Our guest is the author of the very provocative and important piece, Time Magazine, Bitter Pill, Why Medical Bills Are Killing Us. And we welcome your phone calls for Stephen Brill. We'll start with Tom in De Pere. Hi, Tom.
Hello. A couple of things. I had a minor knee surgery performed, just removed some cartilage, and I was in that emergency room for less than a half an hour, and my wife said the surgeon was in there for about less than 20 minutes. And I got a bill for $6,000 from him and a bill for $6,000 from the hospital.
Ooh.
So the way I'm just doing the math, I mean, this guy's making $18,000 to $24,000 an hour. He's billing out it. I mean, and there was just a steady line of people like me. He just went from one to the next to the next.
Well, I will tell you, I don't think the main cause of our problems is that doctors are making too much money. Indeed, one of the ironies is that of all the people in the whole ecosystem who've been making out like bandits, the people who actually do the care, the nurses and the doctors, are doing the least well. Now, I'm not saying that guy is starving, making $6,000 for a surgery, but and that's an issue and a question. But the fact is, I'd be more concerned that the hospital, you know, probably charged you, you know, $60 for the reusable lampshade that went on the lamp that he used in the operating room, or that they charged you $6,000 for the operating room, or that they charged you, you know, $80 for some gauze pads, because that stuff really adds up. There are doctors who make a lot of money, but I guess on my list of priorities, really cutting into the incomes of the people who actually provide the care, as opposed to, you know, the $300,000 of a year you can make if you're a salesman selling, you know, CAT scan equipment to a hospital that doesn't need the equipment but uses it because it overtests and overcharges for it. I'd be more worried about the economy that produces money for that kind of a salesman than I am for an economy that produces money for a surgeon.
And is part of this the heavy lobby? You talk about the lobby in Congress. It is very, very large from the healthcare industry, isn't it?
It's humongous, and it shows in a lot of different ways. And everybody is, you know, Democrats and Republicans are lobbied and effectively, in many cases, bought off by the healthcare industry. In your neighboring state, in Minnesota, for example, the congressional delegation has been trying to get repealed a very small excise tax that was put in place as part of Obamacare on all kinds of medical equipment. When these equipment makers have again enormous profit margins, enormous profits, and the one tax on corporations that the Democrats in Minnesota don't seem to like is that tax on medical equipment makers. Why is that? Because Medtronic, the biggest of the equipment makers, is headquartered, guess where? In Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can take that example and spread that across congressional districts and states all across the country, Democrats and Republicans alike, which is why Obamacare passed, because by and large, with that tiny excise tax probably the exception, the bill did nothing to attack the profits of the hospitals, the drug companies, and the insurance companies. I mean, I'll give you one other example.
Mm-hmm.
Medicare buys its services, as the article indicates, from hospitals in a very cost-efficient way. Medicare does not buy drugs in a cost-efficient way because Congress has prohibited Medicare from negotiating the price of all the prescription drugs that it buys for people on Medicare, whether they're in hospitals or as outpatients. And that has inflated costs. You could probably save $25 to $45 billion
Woo.
A year if Congress were simply took off the handcuffs on Medicare and allowed them just to negotiate with drug companies.
Let's go to an email from Judy in Green Bay. I respect what your guest is saying and feel it is mostly accurate. I work for a hospital patient accounts department. What do you have to say about the always increasing self-pay patient and the cost transferring that it causes?
Well, it doesn't cause, you know, I'm not sure what she means by cost transferring. She's talking about bad debt. Bad debt is a tiny portion of hospitals' revenues. And the bottom line is the average non-profit hospital in this country makes about 11.5% in operating profit, and that's an enormous amount of money. So whatever the bad debt is, whatever anything else is, when you wash it all out, hospitals are still making a tremendous amount of money, and that 11.5% is after they pay executives millions of dollars a year. You know, one of the examples I used was in New York, where the Sloan Kettering, the cancer center, Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, a great hospital in New York, pays its chief fundraiser something like twice what Yale or Harvard pay their chief fundraisers, and three times what the Metropolitan Museum of Art, another very big nonprofit charity in New York City, pays its fundraiser. And the whole healthcare economy is like on a different planet from the rest of us. It's as if there are two economies in this country. In the last 5 years, the economy you and I live in has been pretty hard-pressed, in case you haven't noticed. There's been a lot of unemployment. People have really been squeezed in our economy. Over the last 5 years, the healthcare economy has boomed. There's little unemployment. Everybody's making more and more money. The CEOs of all the companies are making 5 to 10% a year more than they made the year before.
Whew.
Everybody's happy. Everybody's doing well. But the rest of us aren't, and the worst part about it is that healthcare economy has been bleeding the rest of us.
Stephen Brill, our guest this half hour, he is the author of the Time Magazine cover story, Bitter Pill, Why Medical Bills Are Killing Us. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program this morning, the author of Rise to Greatness, Abraham Lincoln and America's Most Perilous Year, the year 1862. Brantz in Milwaukee, our next caller for you, Stephen. Hi, Brantz.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead.
Hi, I'd like to, thanks for taking my call, first of all. I'd like to talk about prescription drugs and the outrageous cost. My girlfriend has asthma, and she takes Advair, the disc, and at any pharmacy, it's like $200 a disc. And so we decided to go through a Canadian pharmacy online, and it's $20 for the same disc. It's called a different thing, but just wanted to get that out there and have a comment. I know it's illegal, but I frankly don't care. I don't think there's a jury that would convict us, and I don't even think they're going to come after us. I just wanted to hear your guest's comment on that. I'll take it off the air.
All right. Thanks for the call, Brent.
Well, it's just an example. It's proof of what I've said about prescription drug prices. where the profit margins or the prices are regulated, the costs are much lower, and yet all those drug companies happily sell their drugs in Canada. It's not like they're losing money on them. They're happy to sell them there. They make a very good living selling drugs in Canada. It's just that we alone, because the pharmaceutical lobby is so strong in Washington, we alone don't allow any regulation of drug prices. In fact, we don't even allow the biggest buyer, Medicare, to try to negotiate the drug prices. Basically, what the law is that Medicare has to buy drugs for its beneficiaries at the average selling price, meaning the average price that the drug companies sell it to everybody else, Medicare has to pay. Now, Medicare is by far the biggest buyer. It should get volume discounts. The Veterans Administration is allowed to get volume discounts and pays a lot less than Medicare. There's no reason for this. There's no reason other than sheer lobbying power.
Well, why is it we have spent, as you well know, years examining our health care system, years having a debate. It goes all the way to the Supreme Court to see whether or not what we're doing is legal. And yet this very substantial question of why the bills are so high has not been addressed. Will it be addressed?
Because it's in everybody in the industry's interest to let the debate be about who should pay, not why is the price so high.
Right.
I mean, just before I got on the radio, I started looking at Congressman Ryan's proposed budget. And he wants to cut Medicare benefits in one way or another. If you allowed Medicare to negotiate the price of prescription drugs, you could get approximately half of the savings that Congressman Ryan is going to get, he thinks, by cutting benefits. You could get half of those savings just by paying lower prices for prescription drugs. Now, someone in his district ought to ask him why he doesn't favor that.
Well, somebody in Congress ought to be talking about that, shouldn't they?
Well, yeah. Why shouldn't the guy who's the chairman of the Budget Committee be talking about it?
Well, that's a good question. Why doesn't that happen? I mean, your article's making a big stir here. I would imagine that a few people are saying, you know, while they're eating lunch, hey, did you see Stephen's article in Time magazine? Let's talk about it.
Well, the answer the drug companies give is, well, if you lowered our profit margins, we wouldn't be willing to take the risk to develop all these wonderful drugs. Well, if you really look, as I did in this article, at what they spend on research and development, all the money they spend on research and development doesn't come close to answering the question or filling the gap of their super high profit margins. So they could cut their margins in half and still have make a very good living, reward their shareholders very well, and still spend what they're spending on research and development.
Mm. Thanks, Brantz, for the call. One more call. We're almost out of time. Judy in Grand Marsh. Hi.
Thank you so much for your fabulous article. I can't lend it out fast enough. The library's copy has a waiting list.
Can you
provide?
Well, it's online also.
On the newsstand?
It's online also, I'm told. So.
I know, but that's hard to read for us
older
folks.
Print it out. I know. I always print them out when they're online.
So that's the way to get it. How about that? A waiting list at the library, Stephen.
That's nice to hear.
You're going to create change here, sir?
I just wanted to answer a basic question I was curious about, which is how come all this stuff costs so much money?
Mm-hmm. Well, you did a fine job of doing that. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Stephen,
thank you.
Stephen Brill, his piece, and it's the longest piece. I mean, this is a long piece, a cover story, recent issue of Time magazine, which really looks at, in bitter pill, why medical bills are killing us. Why exactly are our bills so high? Very legitimate question. Stephen is also author of Class Warfare, Inside the Fight to Fix America's Schools and After the Rebuilding and Defending of America in the September 12 era. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this most interesting hour, and thanks to Katie Madsen for on-air production in our downtown studios. Please stay with us. A wonderful book. It's really very well written about Abraham Lincoln, and 1862 is coming up.